you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. This show helps you build a thriving creative career. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. You can stay up to date with all things Creative Pep Talk by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's jump in and make a splash with this next, with this new episode. Let's go to the episode. This episode is supported by In the Making, an original podcast brought to you by Adobe Express, the all-in-one content creation app included in your Creative Cloud membership. If you are trying to boost the YouTube, TikTok, Reels content side of what you're doing, one episode of In the Making that I think will be super useful to you is their episode with John Yushai. I think John's method for including his audience in the process is really inspiring. And if you want to hear about that and more about leveling up your game in the creator economy, just search In the Making in your podcast player to listen. Many thanks to In the Making and Adobe Express for their support. Really needed to rehaul my website. I was talking to some web people, looking around, and I got intrigued by Squarespace's new Fluid Engine, partially because it just sounds cool, but also because it allows you to drag and resize and layer up anything you can imagine. I dove in, rebuilt my site. It's the most me site that I've ever had. I just absolutely love it. Launched it. Got such a great response. Some industry illustration and designy peers even reached out and was like, hey, who coded this thing, man? I'm like, y'all, I did it by myself. No coding with Squarespace's new Fluid Engine. I told him, like, you should go check it out. You're going to be surprised with what you can do. And I built this thing before Squarespace reached out to sponsor the show. So I was like, boom, easy peasy. I was going to tell you about this new site anyway. Go check it out, AndyJPizza.com, if you want to see what I did with it. If you want to try it yourself, make a site that's totally you, where you can build a portfolio, sell content and courses and all kinds of other stuff, head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain with promo code PEPTALK, all one word, all uppercase. Okay, this is part two of our interview with Susie Altman, our conversation, rather. We just had a big conversation together. And if you thought the first one was good, I think this one might top it. There's some really, really, really good stuff here. I had an absolute blast hanging out and chatting with my friend Susie. If you didn't listen to the first episode, you might not know Susie is an illustrator, a storyteller, a bookmaker. She makes cool toys that are beautiful. Go check her out on Instagram at Susie Altman, SUZYULTMAN. Her work is so phenomenal, and even more phenomenal is just who she is as a person. And I had a blast talking to her that made a big impact on me. A lot of these things that we talked about instantly changed the way that I was looking at my life and my time and my intentionality. And it has given me a peace since I spoke to her. I've had a lot of peace about my endeavors, and I really appreciate it. I know you're going to get a ton from it. Without further ado, here is Susie Altman. You have the quiet time, spiritual practice, whatever you want to call it. You've got being, it kind of reminds me of being the difference between reacting and responding. So you're like, you called it being mindful about your decision making.
Yeah.
But then also, another one you mentioned that we didn't talk about was therapy. Is that a big thing? Because I'm not in therapy. I've wanted to do it for a long time. It's literally like a time commitment thing. But I want to hear, would you sell it on to me?
It's not for everybody. It's been a really important tool for me.
Yeah.
But I've had a couple of big losses in my life.
Yeah.
And I think that I just didn't know how to move through them. So I needed it as a tool. And now it's just become something that I'm used to having, and so it's really important for me.
Yeah.
I definitely would advise it if you're struggling with big changes in your life, I think therapists are really great people to go and talk to. I mean, we all have friends and family, but therapists actually have ways to help you move through, you know, big changes.
Yeah. So that's five. My sixth one is...
There's one that I don't do that should be on there. What is it? Like physical activity.
Yeah. I have a new idea.
It's on my goals list.
Exercising.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'll tell you this. Because I'm so much better version of myself when I'm running.
Yeah.
When I'm doing and I've gone through periods of...
I hear that from people who exercise, that it makes them feel really good.
When I start doing it again, I think, oh my gosh, how am I not doing this?
Yeah.
My mental state is so elevated.
Yeah.
And I'm creative and I'm not good at it.
Okay.
Really.
Okay.
Like, I am my most creative when I'm... When I have those endorphins going, I am clear beyond any other time. But I'll tell you this, because I'm trying to trick myself to get back in a routine, because I haven't done it for years.
Yeah.
And I'm so stressed and time-strapped right now that I put it off. And so I use this as kind of a thing from Donald Miller's Story Brand podcast, where he talked about saying he has to be at the gym 52 times this year.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to do anything in particular. That's his goal. Once a week.
So like even if you just like walk in the door.
Yeah. Just
that
you walk
great.
In the door.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm going to do it this year. I started a chart of I'm going to run 50 times this year.
Okay.
It's not enough to be, you know, it's not going to change my health dramatically.
Yeah.
And then next year I'm going to run 100 times.
Okay. I'm going to set a goal like that for myself. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. It's really simple.
Like low pressure, but just setting some goal, like an achievable goal basically.
Yeah. It's right in between... achievable and challenging, because it's still going to be a thing where I have to make it a priority.
Right.
But it's not so much where it's like I'm overwhelmed before I start.
Yeah. And it's like, I like the idea because it at least gets you into a pattern of behavior that hopefully you'll keep up.
Yep. And I think if I can do 50 this year, 100 will be easy next year.
Yeah.
But, so that's one I'm giving to you, but you're giving me way more than I'm giving you. The last one I was going to say is all of these require a level of control, so like routine and all that kind of stuff. And I've become a person. You're smiling.
I'm thinking I'm trying to let go. Like I'm trying to be less controlled.
Oh, well, okay. Well, then we have the same problem, because I am a ADHD, and a lot of people like that tend to be addicts. So I'm a very addictive personality.
Yeah.
And this point in my life, my worst addictions are things like seltzer water and Altoids and, you know, like not super harmful stuff. But the only way that I've become, you know, have a good diet and all that is extreme control.
Yeah.
And so when something knocks me out of balance, like kids get sick, this happens, that happens. And now all of a sudden, or work goes off. And now, I just wonder what you... do you have a practice for combating things that kill the consistency?
That's really hard. Like, that's just when... so that's where the life experiences come into play.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate what you move through. So both of my sons have Asperger's.
Right.
So... the part of like the consistency for me has come out of watching them needing routine.
And kids need routine too. Yeah.
Kids need routine.
Yes.
When my oldest was first diagnosed when he was little, I remember them talking about like how a schedule would help him, like the routine would help him, and it really did. And then we'd start breaking the routine. It's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I would break it on purpose to see how he would react, and it was really hard. And you know, now he functions really well. But when he has a lot of anxiety, the schedule like needs to be, you know. So I am used to being like the
needs
schedule
needs to be tighter.
Tighter. Yeah. Oh yeah. When there's anxiety, it's like the schedule needs to be. But in terms, so
I think. By the way, sorry,
That's
I just
want
to pause really quick about saying. I find that Asperger's on like the autistic spectrum.
Yeah.
Right? People on that, I feel like that is the other side of the coin of ADHD. I have no idea scientifically what this
means.
No,
they talk about them. I think there's a lot of connections.
Because I've done a lot of research on ADHD, and one of the things they talk about is, even though I know popular culture ideas around right and left brained are not accurate. I do know there's a thing about how I almost feel like we are the other sides of the brain.
Did you hear that new, wait, did you listen to the new Hidden
Brain? I'm very excited right now.
The new Hidden Brain podcast about the right and left brain?
No.
Oh my God.
I'm sold. Oh my God. When you're gone, that's what I'm doing.
It's exactly what you're talking about. I listened to it because, yeah, you have to, yeah, I, oh my God, just
but
listen to I, it. Yeah.
But what's really, I'm definitely going to listen to that. I'm so pumped. But what I find really interesting is there are people with Asperger's are almost like my counterpart. Mm-hmm. And when I meet them, I have a lot of friends that have that because we are, but we're also very intense.
Yeah. So
I know. I don't want to be intense, but I'm so intense
fantastic.
And I can't help it.
It's fantastic.
And, but I find their appetite for life matches mine.
Yeah.
But in different ways.
I
when I get into a zone with someone like that, like I have a friend who just discovered that he's somewhere on the autistic spectrum.
Yeah.
And we spent a week, he came and stayed with us. I'm giving too much information. But anyway, we spent a lot of time together and we talked for like 7 days straight.
Well, what's funny, so a full disclosure.
Right.
When I first met you, I was like, I'm like, I can't quite figure out Andy. And then the second time when you were at the stuff at Rising Design, not that I couldn't figure out, but there was like a different energy coming off of you. And you start talking about your ADHD. I'm like, oh, I get it. Like, I totally get it.
I know it's a different energy. And I think it works really well on my introverted activities where like making stuff.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you're out and about connecting with people, I'm better one-on-one. Even then it's pretty intense. But anyway,
I think what happened was there were like a lot of people around us.
Yeah.
And you were trying to make conversation with a lot of people.
Yeah.
And
I don't do that well. Either.
Well, and I'm also used to being around kids with Asperger's all the time who are not connecting. And I think part of me was picking up on that.
Yeah.
And I just, but I didn't want to like.
That's one of the things is like, there's not much that interests me more than that because it's like, I love talking about it. I also like noticing things about people.
Yeah.
And I like when people notice things about me.
Yeah.
So there's no, some people are very uncomfortable with that, right? If you're like, oh, I noticed you were acting this kind of way in that situation, they're like, oh, don't look at me. But maybe I'm just too egotistical or something. I'm like, oh, you noticed that? That's okay.
No, I think it's, I'm so happy you're like that.
I might pass as neurotypical and I know how to.
Yeah.
Right. But one of the things I've actively done recently is paint my nails and color my hair so that I can't. Now I know that lots of people can do that that are neurotypical, but I noticed something when I was in college. I used to have these giant glasses.
Yeah.
And it made it so that I couldn't hide in terms of being passing as normal.
So people already know when they look at you.
As soon as they see me, they're like, something's different. Not right about this guy.
That's really interesting.
And so it gives me confidence now when I go out and I talk to someone at Kroger.
Yeah.
I'm like, just be yourself. Just this whole weird thing you're going to do where you're going to over-explain yourself and go at a billion different angles at it. Just do it.
Yeah.
And they can deal with it. I don't know. And it makes me, because I have a lot of anxiety about passing as a neurotypical person. Like I get, especially if I'm, especially in business, like, which is weird because I feel like the weirdness of my brain is what makes all of my creativity happen.
Yeah.
But it also, but having to turn that into a thriving career means having to go into business meetings and conference calls and, you know, whatever. And I end up feeling like I have to, or at least until now that I've kind of proven myself to a degree where they like me, I can be a little bit more me.
I really love the way, like how you found a way to present yourself, like visually to kind of explain to people that you're different. I'm feeling some stuff right now because I'm like projecting, thinking about my own kids and like what they move through. But I think that, I mean, that was something really hard for me raising them, was just that people, and this is what you're dealing with, people, I don't think, there's so many different types of disabilities.
Yeah.
And I feel very, very fortunate, like, the kids are who they are. I love the kids for, like, they're amazing kids.
Yeah.
But the one thing I always felt for them is that people think that, like, they're just neurotypical. Yeah. And then when something happens, they're like, what is wrong with this person? I'm like, there's nothing wrong with them. And it's a really, sometimes the world is really confusing for, you know, not so much anymore, but when they were little and moving through it and, you know, needed more like occupational therapy or whatever it was. So it's just, it's a tricky world we live in. We need to give people like space to be whoever they are and whatever. You just don't know what people are going through or what's underneath everything.
And when I see parents now, especially after having our own kids and with all different issues or whatever, and then also having experienced parents that have all kinds of different kids, it does give you a lot of empathy to be like, you know, if a kid's behaving a certain way, you think, you have no idea what's going on. But I, for me, one of the things I've tried to make my mission on this podcast a little bit is ADHD does, one of the biggest struggles for me is that it's treated as a joke.
I agree.
And it's I know for a fact, I mean, I know, I've read enough to know, like, we have all the evidence. These are different types of brains.
Yeah.
And I've seen it, and I can pick up on someone who has ADHD in a second.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, that's like me. That's my brain. And that's a big challenge for me. Whereas at least when someone has, and they all have different challenges, but someone has Asperger's.
Yeah.
Or some on the autistic spectrum. Yeah. We have had a big narrative come through to explain that.
Right.
And I feel like on ADHD, it's still just a joke.
I'm with you. Yeah, I think that can be really painful when you're like, I've really had to struggle with
it. Like, it sucks. And I think my mom, who I know has ADHD, her whole life was a wreck.
Yeah.
And she gets zero sympathy.
Yeah.
And I know she's made some bad choices, but anyway, this is not my podcast. This is my podcast, but it's about you. We'll move on to other things. But anyway, I love that list of, what was your, just so I get it.
Yes.
What did you say? How have you learned at all to roll with it when your routine gets crushed?
So that I said was due to life experience. So I had some things thrown at me that kind of made me pause. And for the first one thing I went through, I'll land on the second thing because it's a lot bigger. And it's what led me to meeting you. But I started reading some Buddhist books, or Pema Chodron, and a lot about like this idea of, you know, being in the moment and, you know, not thinking about the next day. So that helped me like with like certain mantras with myself. If things shift, like everything's fine because everything's fine. Right. Like nothing's really different right now. Like, okay, the kids are home from school on Wednesday because there was a snow day, but has anything really changed? Like, the project will get done because the projects always get done. That's kind of one of my mantras.
Yeah, that's good.
So that was kind of early on in my career. And then more recently, my younger sister, who I was extremely close to, was diagnosed with cancer.
Right.
And I'd moved to Columbus to be close to my sister. I was a single mom at the time.
Was this the same sister that you moved to the West
with? Yeah, she moved out West.
Yeah.
So she moved here for Abercrombie, and I went through a divorce, and I moved here with the two boys, and I was a single mom here, and it was great because we had, like 8 years here together, and she was diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
Sorry
to hear that.
Yeah, thank you. And then, and she was like in it to win it, and she was, I mean, she's an amazing person, super positive. And, you know, life throws you these things, and you don't know what the journey is going to be like. And, you know, thankfully, because of the work I'd done because of the divorce and the work I'd done through the divorce in terms of like sitting with my stuff, I had gained some tools of just kind of sitting.
Yeah.
And that helped me just be present with Joanna as she was moving through her life with cancer.
Yeah.
Because when you're in that space, and have you been in a space like that?
I haven't.
That's great. No, that's good. Good.
But I will say, and I'm not going to derail it because I want to hear more about that. But I will say, recently, I feel like I'm just getting to a stage where people around me are getting divorces,
yeah,
or going, moving through things,
yeah,
and things, you know, just all kinds of real life stuff, even in my own life.
Yeah.
I've noticed like it doesn't, it took me 10 years to get consistency,
yeah,
and control of myself.
Yeah.
Because I'm,
yeah,
an addict and a crazy person.
Yeah.
But that's what I, the next, that's why I ask you that, because the next thing I'm going through is I can see like you're not going to be able to control it. So things,
yeah,
are going to happen.
Yeah.
And how are you going to,
yeah,
roll with that? So,
so I really, like she, you know, was the captain of the ship, and we were all really lucky because she was phenomenal, and
yeah,
she was super positive, and just, you know, just to have somebody like that, in your life that's like steering the ship in that direction, you just follow and,
yeah,
you support them as best you can. But then along the way, you know, there's like, there are a lot of ups and downs, and, you know, you, it's again making those conscious decisions, like, how are you going to manage this? And, how are you going to manage it yourself? How are you going to manage it as a couple? How are you going to move your kids through it? Like, what do you tell? Like, almost every week was different.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, some of it you do in shock, and then some of it you start doing very consciously. Like, how do I,
yeah,
want to spend this time? And then it's the being present and trying to not go into the future. Like, is, you know, is she going to die? Is she not? Because I want to enjoy this time. So, and she didn't believe she was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point, when I recognized, like, she was in the hospital more and not, they weren't able to do as much for her, I made the decision to just stop taking work because I wanted to be just around her as much as I could be. And I just went with the flow. I mean, I still did some projects because I felt like I needed something to be active.
Mm.
And I didn't tell her I did that. You know, all she knew was just like coming and hanging out a couple times a week, or however,
yeah,
five times a week, like, as often,
yeah,
as she'd have me. And, you know, and then eventually she did lose the battle to cancer. And, you know, in life, those are big moments too, and how you like move through the grief, and how you, not in how you move through the grief, but big moments and how you, you know, I'm gonna take a moment here.
That's all right.
So just big moments and like realizing what's important.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have a pretty high threshold for like bad news. Like, I know what bad news looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a lot for there to be like really bad news. So for me, if everybody's like healthy and happy, then I'm pretty like good with,
you're feeling great.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of have like a way to keep that in check. I'm not perfect. I have days where I'm like, oh my God, the kids are at home and I've got like, you know, 20 emails and all this,
yeah,
stuff. And then I'm like, okay. You know, and that's where the meditation, I'm like, go sit with yourself because this is a good day. And,
mm-hmm,
you know, I made a decision with my life that, like, one way to, you know, keep Joe's spirit alive was to just be, like, live every day the best I can. So I'm like, if I can be here, like, I have to appreciate these days and this time.
Yeah.
So it's like part of my goal is to be my best self in every day, whatever that looks like. And I,
yeah,
that, like, I wake up to that every day, is just to be my best self in the day and appreciate the day as much as I can. And I try, and I also hope that's what comes through in my work.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been like, that was a big, you know, that's a big thing that keeps me in check.
Well, first
so
of all,
I don't want anyone to have to learn that way, but,
well,
I think,
yeah,
we all do at some point, potentially. Maybe.
We all will, but also the great thing about, well, you know, thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
And the great thing about you sharing that, I think a lot about our personal journeys where we go get these, they're always full of struggle, and then we get,
yeah,
some kind of reward.
Yeah.
And the most value we can get out of that struggle is by bringing that reward to other people so that they don't have to go through it.
Yeah.
So hopefully, yes, everybody will go through things,
yeah,
like that, but hopefully they won't have to spend a life wasted not having that lesson for them. Does that make sense? So, like, the thing you learned and the gratitude you have for life every day and wanting to be your best self by you sharing the pain that led to that.
Yeah.
Hopefully lots of people can spend more days like that without that pain, without having to feel the... Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm speaking too vaguely.
But I mean, I think basically at the end of the day, we're all just people.
Yeah.
And the stuff we make is amazing, and you want to be doing what you love to do so you can feel good in the day. But being happy is really, really important. Not just happy with your work, but just happy with yourself. And Joanna was like, she lived her 40 years she was on this planet, she lived them like fully. Like she
did
was amazing.
Path.
She and anybody that knew her would tell you that. And I think that, and I wouldn't have things any other way, because I would rather have known her and lost her then than not have had that love in my life. So that's what I carry with me too. And that's what I hope to put out, my creativity. And I hope, you know, and I think that that's who we all are when we wake up in the morning and go to bed at night. We're just people, like, sleeping and waking and doing our best every day. And, you know, we're lucky we create, because we get to kind of try and express all of that through some form. And if somebody will look at it and maybe buy it, that's
great. Yeah.
That's icing on the cake. We're very, very lucky. So I think keeping things organized, like the reason that Brian and I talk about stuff and make sure we're on the same page is because we want to make sure we're connecting. We want to make sure we're connecting with the kids. Like I mean, I've had two moments in my life now where things have shifted in a day, where I've had that news in a day where, like, you know.
Everything's different now.
Yeah, like, your marriage is no longer, like, this marriage is no longer going to be what it is. Yeah. It was, like, the first time. And the second time was Joanna and her husband telling us that she had cancer. And so, you know.
But that.
I'm not afraid of those days anymore. Yes. I just know that it's there. So the in-between times, like, just cherish that calmness and enjoy the people around you and have your tool belt so when those times happen, you know how to, like, manage the stuff.
But you putting out the lessons from that pain.
Yeah.
And the spirit that you gained from that pain through your creative work is the gift of, I think about this all the time. So I was obsessed with, I don't know, maybe critically it's not the best. I don't know. Yeah. I stand behind it. I was obsessed with the show Parenthood, and we watched all of them.
Yeah,
I was
so crazy about it.
I loved it.
Yeah.
And I still think about it all the time. But what I loved about that show, and I think about this as such a pure and high level purpose for creative work, is that every week we would watch that, I would remember what life was about in the same way that you do at a funeral without anyone having to die. And so you channeling this, what the struggle taught you and the spirit that it gave you through your creative work and giving that away as a gift, is it means that people can have the benefit of that spirit and gift without having the struggle.
Thank you.
Because you don't want to go 40 years of your life not appreciating the day-to-day, not appreciating being grateful, and only doing that after you've had this huge pain. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. So I know we've been talking for ages. We can do two things. This is just me being really transparent.
Okay.
We can do a part two.
Okay.
Or we can get to a few other things I want to talk about. What do you want to do? Energy wise.
We could do a part two.
Okay. Because we're doing kind of like a, this is kind of like the first one we'll put out, but then we'll have to do a prequel.
Okay.
Where we talk about your divorce and talk about, because I heard you talk about on another podcast how that turned into the Chronicle stuff and this other stuff.
It was really, it was a really growthful time for me.
Yes.
I really had to, like, look inward and talk to myself and be like, what, you need to slow down and just get yourself in a row. And
yeah. So do you want to have, do you want to talk about that?
Sure.
Or should we put it in the next step next time?
Oh, we can
I'm
do it
cool
next
to
time?
Do it now.
Oh.
But we can, it's up to you. I hope I'm not, I'm putting too
how
much pressure on you.
How much time do we have?
This is an hour and a half. Well, here's the thing. Whenever I have a friend podcast,
yeah.
I let him just roll.
Okay.
And, you know, like Armchair Expert, you ever listen to that podcast?
Yes,
that's
yeah.
Really like 2 hours long.
They
you know,
are,
whatever.
Yeah.
I don't mind.
Yeah. We could just keep, do you want to keep
let's just talk about
keep
it.
Talking?
All right,
okay.
Good. I secretly
okay.
want that answer.
Okay.
So we're going to do the prequel to that, to
okay.
what we just talked about.
Okay.
Because you almost got there in your story where you're talking
yes.
about going from.
I didn't know how deep to get. I'm like, I'm going to talk about Joanna's death. That wasn't,
please.
Wasn't too morbid, was it?
Is
that okay?
That is way okay.
Okay.
I could not
I haven't
be,
talked about that before.
Oh, I am so grateful.
Yeah.
My desperation is for these interviews to become more and more authentic
okay.
and real and deep and
okay.
all of that.
And I wanted to tell you, you know, I had a therapist a long time ago that told me that it's really important to, this is kind of going off on a tangent, but.
No, that's fine.
That told me to reach out. Like
yeah.
when you're in pain or you're going through something to reach out. And it was probably about 6 months after Joanna died, but I had heard your podcast and I found out you were local.
Yeah.
And that's when I called Allison, and Allison had told me she knew you, and I'm like, maybe we could go out for coffee. And because
yeah.
I needed to just like, I not only had I lost Joanna, but like we all had like all these friends and everything just felt so, everything was still very, I was just kind of surreal.
Yeah.
So that's when I reached out and then had coffee with you for the first time.
That's great.
So,
I didn't know that. I don't know
yeah.
if we, because we probably didn't talk about it then.
No, I wasn't no. like,
yeah. By the way, yeah. The first time, yeah.
Crying.
I have a lot of stuff going on. Oh, really? Like what? We'll talk about it.
That's another thing I learned
yeah.
because when I went through the divorce, like there were times I would get together with people and I'd have, what is that from? What's the movie? Oh my gosh. What's the Tina Fey movie with the girls? The word barf.
Oh, Mean Girls?
Mean Girls. Yeah. She talks about word vomit.
Word vomit, yeah.
Yeah. I've learned my lesson with word vomit when
oh,
you
I
meet
haven't.
People. And you're
I
like...
haven't. I do this every week and just broadcast it to thousands of people. But yeah, that's funny. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yes.
I think in the original timeline that
yes.
we were on, we
yes.
got almost to the divorce
yes.
you were talking about. You, after Adidas and Nike...
So we moved to Amsterdam.
Yeah, Amsterdam.
And we were there for 3 years. And that was really, if you look at my work, like super formative in my
is that
creative
technically Scandinavia?
State. No, it's
right. where,
like France and Belgium. And
I can never place where it is,
to
but
Scandinavia.
It's in the north.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm very bad about geography, but I knew that it's...
Yeah.
Around
it's awesome
that.
Because it's really central, so it's
okay.
really easy to travel through Europe. We did
all
go
the
to
Europeans
Legoland.
Hate me right now. So. Yeah, what Legoland
in Copenhagen?
Okay,
so we did like in Denmark. So we went. You can drive like from Amsterdam. So you're close.
I'm going to Denmark later this year. Anyway, we went
Denmark.
To Sweden last year, and I've thought about it every day since
yeah.
we left. Anyway,
Denmark's awesome.
Oh man, I'm so pumped.
Should go through Amsterdam too.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Awesome.
So we went there for 3 years, and then, so this is like the kind of the doing thing. Like I was raised to be like, I can do everything.
Yeah.
I can do anything. I can do everything.
Yeah.
So we went to Amsterdam, then moved the whole family back to Nike in Portland, and we were there for 2 years, and then moved to just north of Boston for Converse, who's owned by Nike.
Right.
So. After some time there, we just recognized that the marriage wasn't working. So we got a separation, and that was really...
That was in Boston?
Yeah.
Okay, real quick.
Yes.
Amsterdam. Can you tell us any... What was your... Just tell us a little bit more about living there.
So it was...
It felt like we just like...
Yes.
Sped through it.
Oh my gosh. Amsterdam was fantastic. That was probably like some of the best 3 years.
What were your treasures and elixirs and learnings?
Oh my gosh. So when we moved there, Oz was 2 years old. My oldest was two. Yeah. And he had a ton of energy. So, and it's funny because I got myself like licensed to do graphic design freelance, which I think I did a little. And that in itself was like a whole thing to do, to go to like the Dutch like government office. And they spoke really good English, but it's very, Europe's so bureaucratic.
Like, I know. Certificate? Yeah. Where's your certificate?
Yeah, it's so crazy.
It's because everything's established there. Yeah. It's old, established. Bureaucracy, certificates, totally.
Awesome. Yeah.
Which is cool about America is that it's Wild West. We don't know it.
Yeah.
We're so, like, you're pretty free to do crazy things.
Pretty much,
but anyway,
So we found like a group of people that we would hang out with and play in the park and whatnot, but he just always had energy. So I'd like strap him into the stroller and we'd just like walk the streets of Amsterdam.
Right.
And we'd go to the museums. We lived like 5 minutes from the museum plane where they have the Stedelijk Museum, which is the modern art museum, and the Van Gogh Museum. I'm not saying Van to all you, the Dutch folk out there. I'm not using my Dutch accent because it's really bad.
What did they say?
It's like Van Gogh.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like you got like...
Yeah, and all the British people that I know call it Van Gogh.
Yes.
So anyway.
Yeah, I just heard that on the British Baking Show. Yeah. They're calling him Van Gogh.
My brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Go to the Van Gogh Museum. I was like, no, what? I can't say that. Anyway.
Yeah. And our little street that we lived on, every, you know, little town, not town, sorry, every little part of the city has its like own little main street, and they have a butcher and a greengrocer.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
They had their kids' stores were amazing. Like you walk in and you don't know which side is boy and which side is girl. There's not sides. Yeah. Like everything's just mixed together. Yeah. The colors are amazing. And then we also had, it was the Nincha store, which the Japanese called Miffy,
okay,
which is the Miffy white bunny. Yeah. It's Dick Bruna. Yeah. So we had the Dick Bruna store on our street.
Oh,
so I would
man.
Take North in there, and I'd, Oz, and I'd plant him in front of the little video they'd have running of the old Dick Bruna cartoons, and I would just walk around the store, look at stuff.
That's amazing.
And yeah, so we would just kind of, Oz and I would just like stroll the streets and like knew all the canals, and he would get a Kas Toasty, which was a grilled cheese. Their cheese is freaking awesome. He still loves cheese to this day. Bad. He's like my cheese kid. So I just spent a lot of time walking the city and just really being
soaking
in the city.
Up.
There's an area called the Little Nine Streets.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's the best buildings. It's like, have you been to Amsterdam?
I haven't been,
So it's so crazy because, you know, everything's built on water and it's these old brick tall buildings. And some of them are just like leaning in crazy ways.
Yeah.
And just to walk the streets and take it all in, and like fun little antique stores and fabric stores and all like bakeries and, you know, all the funness of it. And just a beautiful city.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I love, you know, we live right next to this little uptown area.
It's very similar.
It's the closest we can get. Not, I mean, there's other places like this, but living like this is the closest you can get to the good things of Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
but we don't have a butcher. Which, oh man, if we had a butcher,
so
we could get the deli meat and the
it's
sausages.
So much fun.
It's so
good. Yeah.
It's so much better.
And it
anyway.
Really, it really definitely influenced me visually. I wasn't expecting that. It's really interesting because the Dutch themselves are very, like, somewhat reserved. And when they have this thing where they keep their, in the, like, every bottom level of the apartment, they keep their curtains open. It goes, like, way, way, way back to show people that they don't have a lot of stuff. It's like,
that's
it's not puritanical, but it's something like that.
Yeah.
So
like
they're very
some kind
simple.
Of humility or like some kind of like modesty or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they're very simple, but then when it comes to like design and, you know, everywhere from like fashion to interior, graphic design, like they're really like bright and bold and they take chances and it's just so much fun to like be in all that. So I just like soaked it all in. Basically for three years.
Voice formation, really.
Yeah, and also we were there when Bush was in office, so like people were picketing the streets and asking us like, "What? How do you feel about America?"
Yeah.
And I actually talked to my parents about, like, how do I answer those questions? Because people aren't asking it to be rude; they're really curious.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with this answer. I'm like, "Well, I support, you know, America, but I don't know how. I don't necessarily support the administration right now." Because Europe was really upset with the U.S.
I know,
for just being very bold and like...
Yeah, I lived in England while Bush was in office.
Yeah.
And then it went to Obama, but.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a little.
So I experienced that.
Yeah. So that was, I think, my, you know, feeling, like, understanding how
the
like the global community and, was like knitted together and how close we all were.
True.
It was really important for me. And that's when.
And that's, we don't really see that from living here.
No, I mean, you see it on the news, but it's different to live amongst people that are like really asking you questions about it. And they
care about our politics.
They do. They absolutely do. And then when you can travel to other countries so easily, like you can go to Italy or France and their borders are all open and yet the cultures are completely different.
Yeah.
You also get a different sense of how people are connected. So that became a really big part of my work too. Like we really need to understand that like we are all one planet. Like we're separated by water, but we're all connected. And
we are very connected.
Yeah.
Totally. So. Okay. That answers the Amsterdam question.
Yes.
So then you went to Boston and that's when
the divorce happened and I wasn't really expecting it. And even if you are expecting it, it can be a very difficult thing to process. It's a grieving process on many levels.
It's the death of a thing.
Yeah, of like a family unit that you had, and the loss of that partner. But simultaneously, I had just signed up with Little Rogers Agency. So as I was moving through this loss, I also had found out that Chronicle wanted to work on two projects with me. And I would have never dreamt that that would have happened at any time, let alone at this time. So of course I took the job and I was really fortunate to have a really fantastic art director. I mean, he didn't know any of this personal stuff was going on. But it,
how did, can, sorry, can yeah. I just pause you real quick? How did that, how did they correlate in terms of your, okay, I'm gonna get, this is my
you can
complete,
ask them,
all right, this is my complete transparency that's not normal. No, most
that's
people wouldn't
okay.
say this, but I just listened to this episode with Mandy Moore,
mm-hmm.
and she's interviewed by Marc Maron.
Okay.
And she had a divorce with Ryan Adams,
mm-hmm.
and that's when all of these things started happening, and they didn't happen before that. And I just, listening to you talk about it, it was just reminding me of like this weird like death
accidental.
And new life is happening at the same time. And I'm wondering... I did not need to bring Mandy Moore into this, but
hey, Mandy, if you're listening,
man, that'd be cool.
We love
but
you.
but she—that's when she got This Is Us, and a bunch of other stuff happened right in that time period.
Yeah.
Or maybe that was like whatever.
Yeah, no, this
we
is
don't need to go through
it's
Mandy
okay.
Moore, but
no, that's a really insightful
how is
question.
This happening in tandem?
Okay.
Death and new life, like all it's a shift.
So, and I think that's, and it is an important part, probably part of the story. It's interesting the way you asked it, because I think that's what helped me be present for Joanna. That's why this work was so I have a very dear friend named Lisa.
Yeah.
And she and her husband had moved to Massachusetts, to Boston before us. I knew Lisa's husband from college, my ex did. So they'd gotten the job, he'd gotten the job at Converse, we followed. So Lisa was being represented by Lila. And I've never talked about this before. And Lisa.
I'm doing a lot of good prying,
yes,
sorry.
That's okay, no, it's an interesting, so Lisa had Lila, being the very good business mind that she was recognizing that editorial work was starting to kind of flatten and maybe go down a bit because a lot of the magazines were folding because of the internet.
Yep.
So she was looking for new ways to open up some business for her artists.
Sure.
And she noticed this pattern thing happening like at Michael's. There was lots of like scrapbook papers and stuff. And she was thinking like, I wonder if my artists could do this. Mm-hmm. So she decided, to have a print and pattern kind of class at her studio.
Yeah.
For any of the artists that were in the Boston area. So Lisa asked me if I wanted to take it with her. And I'm like, oh my God, we just moved here. I've got two kids. I don't have a sitter. Like, we have to transition Oz into a new school. Like, I don't know if I can manage all this. And she's like, oh, it'll be fun. I'm like, well, let me see. And so I decided that maybe I could get a sitter. I sent my stuff to Lila, like my graphic design portfolio, and she's like, she was really sweet. I think she's just trying to see if I could like hang with everybody, if I was professional and whatnot. So she accepted me into the group. And it was a lovely group of artists, the amazing women, and Lilla did this great class where we created like some collections of artwork and whatnot. And I was, it was really great for me. It was the first time I was like with other women like that and creating like that in many years. I'm sure Sophie does this, like every birthday party, actually I've seen some pictures, every birthday party was like insane. So I'm like, I need to put my creativity somewhere. Like everyone's gonna get this amazing invitation and baked goods. So this was really fantastic. And Lisa had opened me up to this.
It has traditionally fallen on the mom to take a minute out.
Yeah.
A lot of dads do this too.
Yeah.
If you choose to, like Sophie chose to set down work and focus on the kids while they were little.
Yeah.
And she had all that same thing. Your creativity. Yeah.
Like, it has to come out somewhere, right?
Like, it's your identity.
Yeah.
Like you're being a mom at that stage. You're like, I'm going to own being a mom.
Yeah.
And you know, what you're doing is saying something about who you are, and you got to find a place for that, right? So,
So I took the class, and the class definitely created some friction with me and my ex.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually started pushing back a little bit.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if I could manage everything because my youngest was having some separation anxiety. And oddly enough, I felt like my ex wasn't really encouraging me to keep going with it. He was kind of, I don't want to say too much because he's not here to, there's like two sides to every story.
Totally.
But I felt
only
like,
feel whatever you want to share, is fine. Right.
I felt like I was actually kind of waking up to my own self. I felt like I had been kind of asleep to what had been going on in our relationship and so I was like, because at a certain point we decided that I would.
Yeah. Was that a wink? Right. Yeah.
That I would talk to Lilla and see if I could like send the work into her. Like.
Yeah. Right.
And so she could critique it because it might be too much for me to drive down. And Lilla wrote me a really nice email and she's like, I could do that, but then you would miss out on being with all the women and it's such a nice group.
Yeah.
And here was this person supporting me and being with other women. And I'm like, where does this come from? This is amazing. So I said to my ex, like, she wants me to, and he got a little upset at this idea. Like, we'd already decided that I was going to stay home with the kids. And I was confused because I'm like, I'm the one managing all this.
So
maybe he felt like it was causing friction in the relationship. I mean, it obviously was.
Yeah.
And I think what happened was that started waking me up to potentially other places that were happening in the marriage. And and once you start going down that path, it's kind of hard to come back.
Yeah.
So.
And I think, you know, one thing that's been on my mind a lot recently is, man, it's tricky, isn't it? Getting into all this, you know, personal stuff. But, I'm reading a book about the hero's journey, and they talk about the hero is the one that will make sacrifices, and then I'm watching all these movies and watching the stories of what do we think of as love, and a big part of love is sacrifice. Like, what will you give for the other person? Now it gets unhealthy when one person's giving everything and the other person's not giving anything. But I do think, you know, that's what it reminds me of, just kind of what I'm thinking through in my own journey with relationships of, you know, they require sacrifice.
Yeah.
And you have to think about, and it sounds like that's where some of the friction is coming from.
Yeah. And I think I was fighting. I think I finally found something that was worth fighting for myself.
Yeah.
And my voice.
Yeah.
And,
maybe you're just sacrificing too much.
Well, there was that, and the kids were part of that too, because I was managing the kids. So I started looking at like, what could I actually handle? Like, can I handle the work? Can I handle the kids? And kind of pushing back on this idea that I wasn't taking care of everything, because I actually was, and I was doing this class. So that was like, it was like this message that didn't really make sense to me.
Yeah.
So I actually just started questioning the messages that were being sent my way. And the more I pushed, the more I found out why those messages were being sent my direction. Mm. And
creating a bunch of issues.
And so I do think that it all makes sense because I had to find out that, like, the relationship wasn't working for a reason. Like, I was keeping myself small.
Yeah. And couldn't handle a fully realized you in this.
Yeah, I think he wanted someone bigger.
Right.
But he also wanted someone small, maybe.
Yep. I get it. Yeah, I mean, I totally understand.
You know,
that.
And yeah. I was keeping myself small, and
so this is like a crux.
Because we'd known each other since we were young.
Yeah.
And I think he was looking for someone bigger.
Yeah. Right.
At the same time that he was with me.
Right. Yeah.
So at that point, it was just like, I knew I needed to just move forward for, like, basically for the kids' sake.
Yep.
So that, you know,
it didn't get super messy and
yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So this is, I mean, yeah, it's fascinating to me because I'm so interested in people's journeys to watch the your art journey and your personal journey is mirroring each other, and it's this self-realization moment is happening simultaneously and then as that happens, you do this class, then what happens?
Yeah. But I don't think I realized at the time, like, I was keeping myself small.
Right.
And that I wasn't, like, making myself equal and asking those questions. And, like, then...
You were asleep to all of that happening. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was where I needed to get introspective on, like, who did I want to be in my role in my life?
Where did you find strength and courage in that time? Because you made a bunch of moves...
My sister.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a phone. I'll never forget a phone call. I was, like, on the floor of my house in Massachusetts. And I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. And she's like, you're going to get up and you're going to do this.
Yeah.
And I talked to her about that later because I'm like, where did that come from? Because usually she wasn't, like, we just,
didn't tough love each other?
No. And she's like, Susie, I didn't know what I was doing. She's like, I just knew that I was, like, I was, like, worried for you, and I needed you to, like, do, like to keep going.
Yeah.
But mainly, mainly it came from, I had my sister and a group of really great friends, and they all focused on me and, like, looking forward for me and how I need to rebuild myself, and not, like, nothing really negative, just very positive about, like, how I was going to move forward. And not that, like, how do I put this? Like, I was definitely grieving. I was grieving the loss of my ex, and I was grieving the loss of our family, because things hit you in a way you don't expect it.
Yeah.
But they were all carrying me forward, and that's where Paper Doll Parade came from.
Yes.
Each doll is a different person in my life at that time that was supporting me and telling me, like, giving me... Like, my one friend, Jilly, was, like, told me she put Post-its around her house with, like, positive things. So I'd have, like, a Post-it that would just say, like, you're okay, or, like, smile today. And part of that was also to get myself to look in the mirror, because I was feeling so badly about myself, I wouldn't even look in the mirror. So I'd, like, have Post-its on the mirror to, like, look and tell myself to do things. Mm. And then I would, like, I would get the kids to school, and then I would, like, draw for my Chronicle project, and then I'd, like, cry, and then I'd get up and draw. So I think it just came from an inner part of myself wanting to understand how I got where I was, because I was really confused. I'm like, how did I've been with this person for so long? How did I lose the thread of who we were?
Yes.
Because I'm such a controlling person. I'm like, how the hell did I lose that thread? Like, how did I lose us? How did I get here and he's here? Like, when did that happen? And, you know, how do I move forward with all this? How do I be me? How do I be this single mom? Like, all this, like, shame and guilt I felt for, like, the marriage falling apart because I could do anything, but I couldn't keep the marriage together. It's, like, all these different emotions and just working through all that stuff.
So two things I just want to highlight real quick. One, something I've been thinking a lot about as I'm working through just watching curveballs being thrown at me, or I can see them on the horizon in life. Like I said, I haven't gone through major ones like that since maybe for the past 10 years.
Yeah.
I had a really peaceful 10 years. But as I'm watching stuff happening, and I can feel this, when you see okay, there's a hope that you're describing, which is, although you were grieving, you were birthing a new thing at the same time.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've been avoiding growth because I know that it's going to have a cost or a struggle or whatever. So sometimes it'll cause you to not step forward on the path. But
we in our house call that purgatory.
Right. Purgatory.
It feels like crap. Yeah.
And I feel like even recently, this was like career stuff, but like, I notice like I'm not stepping forward because I know it's going to come with pain and struggle.
Yeah.
But then once you do, that new life sustains you through the struggle.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, it's so worth it.
Yeah.
And that's what it sounds like you're describing that, right?
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, it is hard work.
Yeah.
It's really hard work.
Doing the work that it always comes with a struggle and it is really hard, but.
But it's just about trying to be as honest with yourself as possible. Like we've talked about with my sister, life now, it does end. It's just not a movie thing.
It's not a theory.
Like I've seen it in the movies and stuff, and I live with grandparents that died, but now having somebody really close to me, like it does end. And I want to be as present as I can be, and to do that I have to like have clear thoughts about, you know, like who the people are in my life and what they mean to me and what I'm doing, like what my intent is with what I'm doing. And it's not easy work. And
but you can, there's a bunch of times where you spend that time in purgatory, just like you're saying.
Yeah.
And you're letting your path go on without you.
Yes.
And you, but once you catch up to it, even through the pain, there's nothing more life affirming than being in the present moment on your path as it's happening.
Yeah.
And you can feel all the moving parts are happening when you've had the courage to do it. I know it's like very esoteric and vague.
It's not.
But I feel like when people experience it, they know what I'm saying.
One of the conversations I had with my therapist, she said that that sometimes growth is painful.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I never thought about that. I thought I always felt good. Like, look at me. I'm like growing as an artist. Like, right. I did this thing. And I'm like, oh gosh.
A lot of times it's painful.
Like, I like growing pains, you know? And I'm like, okay, like I can accept that. And that's another thing too, is like just going into acceptance of what is happening. Like, that's really, really important, because that's something that I go back to with Joanna a lot. Is I remember, like, the doctors, like, her being in the hospital and the doctors saying things and people around her not realizing that she was going to die.
Yeah.
And not that I wanted to be the one to say that, but I'm like, my husband and I, again, very lucky that he's my partner. I'm like, she's going to die. And he's like, yeah, that I could have that conversation with him. Like, people, like, the piece of denial that, but I'm so glad I could, because then I could talk to her about
it. Denial is the purgatory.
Yeah, but the thing is that I couldn't have talked to her about death and like what our relationship, we actually talked about what our relationship was going to be after she died.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have had that conversation with her had I not
accepted
that she was going to die.
Yeah.
And that's like for everything, if you can't.
It applies to everything.
Yeah, yes. If you can't accept where you are, then you can't have those conversations with yourself or the people around you. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then you can't enjoy that beautiful thing, even if it's hard, even if it's, whether it's something as hard as a death or a breakup or something as beautiful as, like, you know, a new job. Like, you can't, it's all intertwined. And you
got to be in it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want to say something that I think is so nuanced and relevant. You said about this, by the way, in case you don't know, Paper Doll, what's it called?
Paper Doll Parade.
Paper Doll Parade, by the way. Hanging up, we framed them.
Aww.
They're in our house.
Oh my god!
They've been in our house since before I knew you.
Oh, that's amazing.
Since before we lived in Columbus.
That's great.
It's crazy, right?
That's great.
Chronicle sent them to me when we were doing our second book.
Oh my gosh, that's so amazing.
So crazy. Yeah. But so we've had this long going synchronicity, cosmic friendship.
Those are all my sister and all my best friends.
And so, and I want to say, so we love that those pieces.
Yeah.
And they're like these individual cards that are these girls. And I'll put it in the show notes so people can see it. But what I think is so powerful is, you know, earlier we were talking about when someone draws an apple a new way.
And yeah.
A million people draw an apple. I think there's two ways of looking at that. So as an artist, when you're being influenced by somebody, realize that if someone comes along and draws those girls, that they've just, maybe they've learned, maybe they'll learn something from it, but it will always be so hollow and it will not have the fire that it had for you.
Right.
Because it came out of your journey at that exact time from those real people.
Yeah.
Like it has this, you know, energetic depth to it. And I think for you, for me, so there's that element. And the other side of it, that I try to look at it as, when someone's copying me, I try to think, okay, they can steal that, but I know they will never get the energy from it.
Yeah.
And until they, and maybe that's just a learning part for them. And until they figure out how to match their real energy with their art, it will never transcend.
Yeah.
It'll never have an inflection point. But that, 'cause that's what happened to you.
Yeah.
Your real life and your art crossed at that moment.
Yeah, they absolutely
And it was
did.
Explosive. It changed everything, right?
Yeah, it did.
And what that paper doll, what happened with that?
So there was that, and there was the poster set, the
which
Home Sweet
both.
Home.
Yeah.
Which was, I didn't realize at the time, but that was me processing saying goodbye to the town I lived in.
Yeah.
Which was really important, because if anybody out there has been to a therapist, you probably know you're not supposed to like just jump ship and like move town.
Yeah.
So I had...
I could do better at that. I'm bad at that.
So we made the decision that it would be good, like really good for me to move to Columbus with the kids and be closer to family and whatnot. So I was leaving this town and I just like walked around and I would draw the buildings, and it was an old whaling town, so there were whales in there, and there was like an old like forest sanctuary with the owls and all that stuff. And that same thing, those owls, like, I don't know how many different products they ended up on after, like, my first year with the agency. The dolls, the paper doll parades and Home Sweet Home just, like, catapulted my career. I couldn't have, I don't even, like, there was something about the time they came out, like, what it, like, whatever vibration was happening culturally.
Some kind of zeitgeist that it's picking up into.
And
it's, and you couldn't have faked it or mimicked
it.
And I'm thinking about, you know, the whale piece was framed in our bathroom.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And the owl piece was in another place. And I think if you're a user of, you know, or you're just a customer, you're seeing it as like, oh, owls and whales are kind of in right now, I guess. Whereas you are living this experience, which is amazing.
Yeah. Anyway. And the snail house, those became really important for me, because that's where, and that's where I started my whole thing about home, because we had worked for a year on renovating this house that we were leaving. And the movie Up came out.
Yes.
And that was like such a tearjerker for me.
Oh,
when
me
he's,
too.
Oh my God. So this idea of like home is whatever, and I'd moved around so much and now I was moving to Columbus, like home was gonna be wherever we were and whatever I made of it. And then that's become a huge theme in my work too.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty big deal.
So I think your work is very sophisticated and also simple in a great way.
Thank you.
But I could see people, and people think this of my work too, where they'll see it and think, well, it's not a technical drawing. It's not, you know, it's not some complexity, right? But what people don't understand is, I think the reason yours has that resonance and the reach and been able to apply to all these different things is, there's such an emotional, energetic depth to everything that you're doing.
Thank you.
And listening to you talk about home and what these things mean to you, and, you know, the snail home, like that idea is so deep and powerful. And even if people don't know it, you can sense it while you're going through your Instagram or on your books or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a depth that someone might be able to redraw that snail.
Yeah.
But they'll never, it will not be a motif that works its way through all these things and has this emotional depth.
Yeah.
And I love being able to witness that and hear
Thank
about
you.
It.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. So, okay. Is that a pausing place?
Sure.
Or do we need...
Oh, I don't know. You leave.
Okay, we'll pause there.
Okay.
Is that okay? Did
you
want to finish any element of that?
No, that was good.
Okay.
how did I do with all this
amazing
stuff? Oh my
this
god
is such a good conversation.
The wink,
oh my god,
you called me out on my wink. I can't wink worth anything. I was just practicing the other day. I'm like,
that's what I didn't know. Is that a wink?
Yeah, like, are you twitching?
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Well, I just want to have this on the episode.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
This is a gift to me.
Oh,
and watching, you know, I feel like you shared your story in such a way where, you know, talking about your sister and then, you know, flashback to her helping you through the most important time of your life as a person and an art career is such a sweet moment to witness. And even the way that it came out in this story is like, just touched me. And I'm so grateful. I'm grateful for me because it moved me, but I know it's going to be so, you have no idea. You have no idea. Like the things that when people come on and give those kind of gifts, the way that they impact people through the thousands of people that listen to this,
it'll
blow your mind.
Okay.
So just, you have no idea how grateful I am and how grateful I know my audience is. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Seriously, thank you, Susie, for coming on the show and sharing your story with us. I have a very, very strong conviction that lots of people are going to get something life-changing, game-changing, career-changing through this episode, and it's only because your generosity and openness. I can't wait to chat again, friend. Thanks for coming and sharing all this with my audience. Let's do another Patreon shout out. We are partially, you know, not unlike NPR or what have you. We're also listener supported. And if you haven't joined the crew, you don't have even the possibility of getting the patron shout out. But let's take one of our patrons at random and tell you about him. Austin Saylor, I'm talking to you. Come on down. Don't actually come over here. That's weird. But come forward as we speak about you. You are Austin Saylor. Austin, as you usually spell it. And then Saylor is Saylor.com. Lettering animation. Very sophisticated. Very lovely stuff going on here with some real fluid, swashy, illustrative lettering. Beautiful stuff. Go check it out if that's your kind of jam. It's Austin Saylor on Instagram. ItsaustinSaylor. Go follow him. He's making cool stuff. Thanks, bud. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Means a ton to us all. You get to listen to this because of Austin. So you better go thank him too. Thanks, Austin. You make it possible. You make it possible to be... I know every one of you is like, Andy, no, stop singing on the show. Okay, thanks, Austin. Thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for our theme music. Thanks to... But also, don't forget about the tour. GrandPepTalk.com/tour. We're going to be in LA next week. See you there. We're going to be in Memphis the month after that, April. Go get your tickets at creativepeptalk.com/tour. And thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for our theme music. Thanks to Alex Sugg for editing this show and providing the soundtrack. You're the man. Thanks to all of you for listening. Until we speak again, stay pepped up.